Good morning, sir. And what is your name, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Terrence Shaw Williams.
I just didn't hear you. What was your name again, sir?
Terrence Shaw Williams.
I mean, that's mine.
Sorry.
I need two words.
Which one is it?
Tryon Deshaun Williams.
Okay, Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams, you have it, sir?
Yes.
Okay, the Honorable Mr. Leo will conduct your hearing, sir. So he will just remain on the phone. He will be right with you. He will be the lead, sir, for your hearing.
Okay, good morning, sir. Would you state your full name and ADC number for the record, please?
Yes, Tryon Deshaun Williams, 242-018.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Oregon Board of Executive Clemency today in reference to your community supervision revocation. I'm going to introduce the board members that will conduct your hearing in the fact. To my right is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman. To his right is the Honorable Michael Johnson. And my name is David Neal. I'll be the hearing lead. Also with us today, we have Mr. Westby from the Department of Corrections, and he'll also represent the parole office today. So prior to this hearing, you received notification form advising you of this board hearing. Do you remember that form, sir?
Yes.
Okay. On that form, you're notified of your right to appear and speak on your own behalf of obtaining a licensed attorney at your own expense. Did you hire an attorney, sir, or are you representing yourself today?
I believe I'm representing myself.
Okay. Well, just so you know, I don't really know how you're seeing it, but I look off to my left because we have a TV screen, and it's much clearer than the big one in the gallery. So, did not have a any on you.
Yes.
Okay. We have several people in the gallery here. Two people. We have Michelle Cooper and Cheryl Rushing. Do both of you ladies wish to speak?
Yes, we do.
Okay, when I do the swearing in, I'll swear you two in along with Mr. Westby and Trayon, right? Okay. Okay, sir. At this time, I'm going to swear you in. Also, Michelle Cooper and Cheryl Rushing are going to be sworn in because they're going to speak on your behalf, and Mr. Westby. So all four people. Do you sign this word, tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm? Everybody's waiting on everybody else. Okay. Trayon, you do?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
So,
we do.
I do. Okay. What they do? It's in. Having an audio record sometimes is a little complicated. Okay, we're going to go through phase one, and then in phase two, that's the portion where you're able to speak. So it'll be kind of toward the end of the hearing, okay? All right. So your hearing, sir, will be conducted in two phases. In phase one, we'll determine if the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated, and then if they've been violated, in phase two, we will determine whether your community supervision should be revoked or reinstated. So for phase one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read one allegation on your warrant, and after I read it, I'm going to ask you if it's true or false. Now, I haven't read the full allegation, so I'm not sure of the circumstance. So there's no report showing indicating necessarily that there's pending charges, but I'll give you that benefit. And what that means is when I ask you if it's true or false, I also ask you if you want to plead the fifth. Because if you do have something pending out there, they could use this, recording of this hearing as evidence to get you to court. So I just don't want to take a chance, because it's listing like 3 months' worth of problems. But I don't have any report numbers indicating there are pending things, okay? All right. Not too complicated. All right, so allegation number one is a violation of Oregon Conditional Supervision Number 5 as demonstrated by your engagement in physically assaultive behavior during the months of June, July, and August of 2018. So is that true, false, or do you want to plead the fifth on it?
That's false.
It's false. Okay. Since it's false, Mr. Rusty is going to go over the allegation, and then we'll discuss it some, okay? Mr. Rusty.
On August 7th, 2018, Parole Officer Cream received a written statement from Cheryl Rushing, the offender's ex-girlfriend, that the offender Trayon Williams, 242018, physically assaulted her on multiple occasions, June, July, and August of 2018, after his release from prison on April 11th, 2018. The victim stated in June of 2018, the offender and her were in an altercation during which the offender assaulted her by pushing her onto a bed and putting his knees on her elbows while holding her wrists down with his hands and pushing his face into her face. The offender continued the assault by placing his fist on her face and pushing it up into her cheek and eye. The offender then proceeded to bite her in the face. The offender began to choke her before he finally got off her and left the room. The victim stated that her two minor children witnessed the assault. The victim stated that in late July 2018 that she and the offender were engaged in a physical fight at the victim's home in 2132 West Chambers Street, Phoenix, Arizona, 85041. The victim states that during this altercation, the offender pushed her and she fell against the couch and then on the floor. The victim further states that her two minor children were present when this assault occurred, and her presence stopped the offender from further confrontation on this day. The victim reports that the offender packed his belongings and left the house that day. The victim states that on August 6, 2018, the victim agreed to allow the offender to ride to school to drop off her son on his first day of school. While in the vehicle, the offender began calling her names and yelling at her. Upon arrival at her house, she and the offender both exited the vehicle, at which time the offender confronted her in the rear of the vehicle and smacked her on the face and pushed her. The offender then took her purse off the back trunk of the vehicle and began to dump the contents over her head. He then hit her in the face again. The offender then proceeded to walk to his car and eventually left the area. The victim stated that her two-year-old daughter was still in the vehicle during the assault and witnessed it. On August 7, 2018, at approximately 11:35 hours, the victim filed an order of protection with the Phoenix Municipal Court. On August 9, 2018, the offender reported to the South Mountain Parole Office as directed. Due to the information given to the victim and based on the offender's violent history, the offender was taken into custody by parole staff. The offender was transported to ARTC by transportation staff. And attached to the warrant is a copy of the order of protection that was provided to the Phoenix Municipal Court with details of the incident that was previously mentioned.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Mr. Williams, so why is the allegation false?
On the 7th, we had an argument, but no physical. I never physically assaulted Sherelle. I would assault her. These allegations come from me not being faithful to her. I do love her, but no.
Okay. So
this is just to put me back in.
Okay, sir. It seems like there's probably going to be a little bit more of a lengthy discussion needed on this particular allegation, so I'm going to move us forward into phase two, so hang on for a couple of minutes and then we'll proceed, okay? All right, so based on the information in warrant number 2018W2285 and the information from Department of Corrections, I am going to move to find that Mr. Williams was delinquent as he violated his terms and conditions of supervision and that he may have lapses or above lapses in the criminal age for company.
Second.
Great. Motion by myself, seconded by Dr. Wright, read by Mr. Johnson. Okay, sir. Before we actually get started on phase two, Mr. Rusty is going to give us some background information, so stay on the phone, and when he's done, I'll get right back with you, okay? Mr. Rusty.
On April 11th, 2018, Mr. Williams was released by the Arizona Department of Corrections. He was arrested August 8, 2018 by ADC staff, no new charges. He was back in DOC custody on August 8, 2018 with a projected community supervision end date of April 9, 2020, 0 abscondes. This is his first term in DOC. Current conviction, 2009, murder, second degree, 12 and a half years. He has no prior convictions. CUIR score 3.3, mental health score 3, substance abuse score 3. STG gang information notes, he's a member of the Westside City Crips criminal street gang. He has no prior terms of supervision. His disciplinary violations are moderate, sex acts, disorderly conduct, and rioting noted. Other arrests, 2006, disorderly conduct, Arizona, misdemeanor conviction, probation. He has other arrests for assaultive behavior, however, those charges were either dismissed or not processed. His community risk score is a G3B4.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Williams, next step, we're going to go through a summary of your case supervision and we'll discuss some of this as we go along. It says that initially you approved you to reside at 2836 West Boker Street in Phoenix, and there was no other approved residence. A written statement from the victim, Cheryl Rushing, stated that from April of 2018 until July of 2018, that you were residing at her residence at 2132 West Chambers Street in Phoenix. It was never approved or discussed with your PO as a viable location. So, which address were you staying at when before you got arrested, sir?
Okay, 36 West Boker.
Okay, so why would Cheryl say that you were staying with her if you weren't staying with her?
Cheryl's, I'm sorry to say, but she was mad at me and she knew that these allegations would probably let me back here in the way I heard.
Okay, so you're saying that's all fabricated, right?
Yes, sir.
So, did you have any employment by that, sir?
Yes, sir.
What were you doing?
I was in shipping at Western Windows.
Okay.
In a warehouse.
So, according to the programming with Task, you had, looks like five UAs you got during that time, they were all negative, so you don't have any drug or alcohol problems, apparently, at least not this time. Is that true?
Sir, I'm not trying to backslide. I'm committed to staying out of prison.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, to see nothing in the way of drugs or alcohol is very commendable. Okay, and it says you had an intake with LifeWell on June 21st of 2018. So when you did the intake, did they set you up with any programming?
I think I had to go back. It was a little later day than when I got arrested for another evaluation.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions and then we'll let your supporters speak, okay? Mr. Brown.
Sir, maybe I missed it. Who lived at the address at 2836 West Boker? Whose address was that?
That's my aunt and my mother.
That's your mother and your aunt's address?
Yes.
Okay. And so the alleged incidents and this warrant, were the police ever called out? Were you ever served with your other, huh?
Yeah, I never had police contact.
Okay, were you ever served with the order of protection?
No.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any questions, Dr. Ray?
Not at this time, sir.
Thank you, sir. Okay, if you ladies would like to speak, you can choose which order you would like to, but come up to the podium and state your name and then tell us what you'd like us to hear.
Good morning. I am Michelle Cooper, mother of Trey Ann Williams. And I just wanted to speak on his behalf and let you know that since the day he was released, he had been residing with me and my sister at our house at 2836 Boker Street. But he would go and spend a lot of the days at Sherelle's house and come back like about 2 in the morning back to our house once she falls asleep. So he wasn't like living there, but he would spend most of his, some of his days there and spend his days there with the kids. So he had like a change of clothes and stuff like that at her place, but that was not his residence to where he slept. So, and ever since he's been out, he's been doing really good. He got a job through Allied Staffing working with Western Windows. Right before he was taken back in, they let him go from Western Windows because he had a home visit with his PO. And I guess you can't miss any days when you're working with a temporary agency, so they let him go from that assignment. And he was working with someone at the workforce development there in the parole office building to then for another job. He actually had an interview scheduled that day before he got incarcerated. So he's been working the program since he came home. But this altercation with his girlfriend, I do think they need to work on their relationship and have some type of like counseling. So I was telling him to work through the counselor that he's going to be going through. Well Springs, I think it's called, where he has had his evaluation with to see if he's able to like have any type of relationship counseling through there, because they're a pretty good family. As this, he's been away for 11 years and trying to come back home to get staffed into the community and stuff like that. It's been, a challenge, but he's been working really hard. And I think that, if given a second chance, he'll do better this time around.
He says he can't hear. Excuse me, is the green light on right there? On that mic, is that green light on? Okay, can you hear now? Can you hear now?
Can you hear now? Oh.
Yeah, I'm trying to hear. Okay. Yeah, I don't think so. Just, what she was just going over what your residence and where you were staying and how that was occurring, and she was talking a little bit about the counseling that you're supposed to be going to through LifeWell. So, okay, so that's that. Pretty well summed up what you said so far, so.
And yeah, like I said, it's like if he's given a second chance, I think he'll do, okay. He's been working it and, trying to, avoid any type of pitfalls that might land him back there. And, sorry that he's back where he is, but we're going to work on it if given a chance.
Okay. Any questions from the board?
Thank you so much for coming today. Were you aware of the fact that he and his girlfriend was having some problems, or was this something that occurred? I'm trying to figure out what happened. I know what happened based on what's been said, but were you aware of it? Did it get to you?
They're both very strong,
willed
people. It's two sides to everything, but. And she'll speak on her behalf. But I know that they sincerely love each other, and if they can work on it, they'll be okay. So.
And you mentioned kids. How many kids are involved in this relationship?
Trayvon Jr., he's 11, and then Talon Ray, she's 2. But she's not my son's, but we treat her just like she's the same, so it's no difference.
Junior, that is his son.
Yes, he's been locked up since his son was 3 weeks old. So, so, and his sons really have a hard time with his dad being gone again, because they were just now starting to have their bond. The reason why he didn't get parole to their house is because Sherelle is on a program through the city, and the city, she can't have anybody that has like a family or anything like that, to live with her. So he didn't get parole to her house. So that's why he's residing at our house. He spends a lot of time there, so once he comes home, and if he's able to, you know, land a pretty good job, they should be able to move off the city housing and move in, you know, to a place together once he's, you know, clear from the parole.
So at your house, that was just you and your sister, and who else was living?
My sister and my nieces, her daughters. And she has three daughters.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir.
If he was released back out, because he's been in this altercation with his girlfriend, he wouldn't be able to stay there or have any contact with her for the remainder of the time that he's on parole. How do you think that would work?
How would he not be able to have contact?
Right.
She's went to the courts and had the order of protection withdrawn so that...
What I'm saying is that if he was released back on community supervision, mm-hmm. part of the conditions of his release on his parole is that he wouldn't be able to have contact with his ex-wife because she's been an alleged victim of a crime, so they would not have any contact with each other. How do you think that would work with the kids?
And what do you specify as a crime if there's no charges or police report or no order of protection in place?
Well, he's been alleged. What I'm saying to you, as part of his parole, and the way the parole is set up, if he's been involved in some altercation of any kind like that, then part of his parole is going to be that he's not going to be able to have any contact with her for the remainder of the time that he's on parole.
Okay, so they can't attend family counseling or anything like that together at all to
unless they get permission from the parole officer.
He could also not have any contact with the kids as well because they were involved, they were present when this alleged incident took place. Therefore, you know, that would be just, they just wouldn't be able to communicate anyway with each other, whether it's personal, telephone, or modern, whatever you call it, social media. I mean, that's not us. That's just the way that it operates. Are we correct, Mr. Westby, sir?
Yes, that is correct. Per Arizona Department of Correction policy, there can be no contact whatsoever, either physical, electronic, telephonic, written, or by electronic means for anybody that is a past or present victim of any crimes. And there was a search of public records that he was arrested in twice in 2016 for disorderly conduct and then also for misdemeanor assault. So regardless of the order of protection is withdrawn, for the Department of Correction policy, he can't have any contact with her whatsoever.
You said 2016? He was in prison.
Might be a title on this. I'm just reading what's in the report. There was a public record search.
I just see that. I was going to ask about that too, because it hasn't twice.
Yeah, I believe it might be a title that's on there. I'm just reading what's on there. It's on the case supervision summary page and the last page of the warrant.
All right.
Excuse me for interrupting, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I want to be sure we're done.
Yes, sir.
He contemplates a lot.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. And thank you for appearing today. Okay. Would you like to come up? Okay. Careful.
Hello.
All right, state your name.
Sherelle Reshin.
Could you speak up a little bit when you're
Sherelle Reshin.
Okay.
So, yeah, I am the one who had called the police. Everything that I stated in the protective order is more so of, I'm not innocent in the situation at all. Like, when I found out, you know, that he was not being faithful, it was more of me attacking him and him more so trying to stop me from attacking him. And I'm also a very dramatic, you would say. So I took it more overboard than what it really was, or what really happened. It was more of me attacking him and him trying to stop me from attacking him when I found out that he was, you know, when he got out, other than just, you know, the shooting, he was doing what he was supposed to do. He got out, and when he started working about mid-May at the Lieutenant Agency at Western Windows, he went to work every day. He helped me support the kids. I have lupus, so I never know what my day is going to be like. So whenever I am sick, he's there. He did not live with me, but he was at my house a lot because he helped me with the kids a lot. He helped me with myself a lot because I have lupus as well as multiple other health issues. So he was at my house a lot, but he did not live with me. He did everything he was supposed to do. He was good. He went to all the when they did his cover come up, he would go. Whenever he had to go to me with his parade parole officer, he would go. He did everything he was supposed to do. He was there for my son. My son, he's not the most, he's a very good kid, but he's getting older to where he can support and have his parents, so he doesn't really listen to me that much. But when dad came home, his grades came up, he got a medal for most improved student in his class. His grades came up, his room stayed clean, his chores were done. Now that dad's gone, our child's gone, the room's dirty. And 4 days back in full effect. And he really misses his dad. He actually wrote something for him, for you guys. I have witnessed, I mean, character statements as well from his, so a few of his friends. Can I read something? Is that okay? Okay. He said, my name is Trey Williams Jr., and I am 11 years old. My dad has been locked up for all of my life, and I was happy when he came home. He spent time with me, and we had fun. I don't want him to go any longer. I miss him and love him. Please let him come home for me and my sister. Both of my kids really, I mean, my daughter's not even biologically, but to her and his dad, he came out and he stepped up for her. And she misses him too. Every time she sees a picture, she's pointing. She doesn't really talk that good, but she says daddy in her own words that I know what it means. My son really misses him. Even my parents, like, even though what me and him go through, like, nobody in my family has any type of ill will towards him because he is a good man. And I really, if I would have known me getting the protective order would go against or putting him here, I did not need to put him here. I would have never tried to put him here. I wanted to continue to better his life because that is what he was doing. He wanted to be an entrepreneur while he was working. I would never, you know, did it if I knew that that was under, I don't know his parole terms, I don't know that stuff, so I know, in my mind, I just thought he was cheating and I wanted to stay away from me. So, without me knowing how it was going to affect me or my kids or him, I just ran down there and I got the order, and as soon as I found out, I went and I dismissed it, hoping that it would help to get him out, because I want him to be there for his kids, because he was a good man and a good dad to his kids, a good example for his kids. Without the relationship things that went on between me and him that should have just stayed in the house.
Okay, there's a couple of questions. Well, one thing I'd like to tell you, you gave a written statement to the parole officer making these allegations long before, you know, before you got the order of protection. I understand that you probably went and got the order of protection at the behest of the PO and says, go get an order of protection, that's what you need. And you went to the court and you signed paperwork and said, this is all true and correct. Okay, now you're here and you've been sworn in and you're under oath. So you're changing your story. You gave one story to the PO. And when you got your order of protection and that is done, you swear in front of a judge that this is true and correct, okay? And you made allegations against him being assaulted and that you were afraid of him, that you were, I don't even have the order of protection read it's in here, but I'm familiar with him, quite familiar. So you told him that you were worried that he might hurt your children, one or two more, and that he was a danger to you and your family, and the judge said, okay, you're in order of protection. Now, if he would have the right to a counter hearing before it goes into effect, but he was incarcerated before that, he would have even had that. But my point is, how do we know you're telling the truth now?
I guess there's no way for me to 100% let you know that I'm telling the truth. I never think that he would hurt our kids. I don't want our kids. I've never told him that I thought he would hurt our kids. I'm not afraid of him. There's no way for me to prove that I am telling the truth now, but that was just something that I was just really, really hurt, and I just couldn't believe that he was cheating because, you know, he was gone for 11 years and I was there all the years, and then when he got out, I supported him. I bought all clothes, shoes, gave him a car for him, money. I did everything for him, so when I found out that he was cheating, it just broke my heart, and I went through depression and everything while he was gone. I had to get on medication for it, and it just like broke my heart, and so I just kind of, that's what if I could take it back, I would. That was just what I did, and now I'm here trying to fix it and make it right because it was wrong of me to do, and I'm just trying to make it right now because I shouldn't have done it.
Well, in this issue that Mr. Johnson brought up about contact, you gave a written statement to a parole officer, which is now on record, you know, with public information and everything else, but you made a statement that he was assaulting and that you had these fights and everything else like that. So, regardless of the fact that you had the order of protection quashed, that doesn't eliminate the actions that occurred to get it brought up, okay? It only eliminates the order. According to DOC policies, you know, you're in here as a victim in their paperwork. You did get an order of protection, and then the court swore that you were a victim and that you had these issues. So, because of everything that's already happened that you can't eliminate, he's not, if he's out, he can't talk to you or the children because they're named by you as victims as having been present during these altercations. So, you know, that's the kind of issues we're looking at here. But the assaulting behavior, and so if you attack him, he didn't leave, he doesn't understand that that's going to get him in trouble, even if you attack him. And if you call the police, if you both have marks on you, you both go to death. Okay, it doesn't make any difference who started it. Normally, it's if you have a fight and there's physical evidence of injuries. So if he hits you in the mouth, then you call the police and they see that your mouth's swollen, he go to death. You know, there's those kind of things. But with the charges that he is incarcerated for, there had to be something really, really serious in the behavior issues at that time for it to be second degree murder rather than manslaughter or involuntary home, anything lesser. Second degree murder is quite a bit less than first degree murder, and they have sentencing options that they don't have. But it takes quite a serious crime to get up to that level. And it involves anger management and those kind of issues. He's out, and it's obvious that he hasn't controlled his anger management. And if he's doing things that's going to upset the mother of his child that's doing all the supporting, he's doing it consciously. So I'm very concerned about his anger management abilities. And if you get out there in this kind of situation where he cannot contact you and he cannot contact his son, that just is a breeding ground for more trouble. And because of the seriousness of what he's in for, I have a real huge issue with, even though the protection that we sent him, even though you're rechanting a lot of what you said, there was some behavior there that was falling into the anger management situation. And so I have a real problem with you. You know, now you're here in front of us, and you swore to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
and you say, well, now you're telling the truth, but that's what you did in front of that judge, and that's what you did with the PO. So it was like three times now you're saying this is the truth, exactly like it happened, but the third time was not the charm, but it's the one that's, you know, it's like, okay, how can I believe you now? Because you lied twice before, or you're lying now. Or you're just backpedaling, and I spent a lot of years working with this kind of stuff. And but, you know, the problem is, we have, this board have a duty to the citizens of the state of Arizona, and, you know, and that is protection. That's one of the things we do here, is we, you know, have to decide if the person coming out might be a threat to society, not necessarily you. But, you know, if you've got this girlfriend on the side, you're having a fight, and he wants to battle with her, and all that, and one thing leads to another, then somebody's hurt. And if we got an out to do that, then, you know, basically, you know, we made a mistake, and we got a right to do that. We have, you know, we can ruin the people we need to protect, you know.
Yes, well, what I was saying, I didn't see any anger issues prior to me. You know, I was going, I wasn't stopping, basically. So he was calm while I was sitting there in the beginning, but I wasn't stopping. Before that, if it wasn't for me jumping on him, I did a lot to him. Like, I destroyed a lot of clothes, I choked him, I smashed all four tires. Like, I was going in on him, and he was just telling me stop, and eventually it was just like he had to stop me. But before me doing all of that stuff, I never saw him. I mean, he never did any type of anger towards me, my kids, anybody else. I was provoking him. I was doing a lot towards him. And I know there's no way for me to prove any of it or make it to y'all believe that I'm telling the truth because of the previous statements, but it was all relationship stuff that I was just hurt by, and I shouldn't have did it. So, but I don't believe that he'll get out and be a menace to anybody or hurt anybody or do anything, because his main goal was not to be back here, and I knew that, and I did what I did.
Okay. Got any questions for Mr. Johnson?
So, Emmett, you wrote a 5-page statement to the court.
It was 5 pages? I think it was 2.
It was one. I thought I saw 5 pages. It could have been like 5 pages, including the other.
When I went in, they had me writing more. Like, they were like, you need to put something else on here. You need to put something else on here. So I only went in there for the.
It was 5 pages.
I didn't know that for a while.
So let me just ask you a couple of things on this, though. Because one of the things that you said in here is that you put him out your house. He was gone for a week. Mm-hmm. You asked your son if he wanted him to come back, and your son said no. Mm-hmm. Did that happen?
That I did let him come back over for a week, and I asked my son if he still wanted that to come around. He said no, but I was being... kind of the devil advocate, I guess you could say, like, because I'm the one who raised my son, so my son's mom's boy, so I was more like, he knew everything that was going on, and he would hear me talking about it, and so I think he was just kind of siding with mom, but he wants his dad.
So Ms. Williams, do you understand the situation that you kind of have everybody in at this point in time?
No, I do, yes, I do.
And that, it is the policy, not our policy of this board, but it is the policy of the Department of Corrections that if he was out on parole because of these allegations and the things that you've said and because of this incident that has occurred, that he couldn't have any contact with you or your kids. He couldn't come over to the house, whether it was verbally written or anything like that, and he would wind up back in trouble again. Do you understand that?
No, yes.
So how would that work?
Is it, because earlier I heard, I don't remember which one you said, but earlier I heard that if it's approved by the parole, like if we can go, if he can...
If the parole officer would have to approve it, but I'm not sure, Mr. Westby, you can have.
That was the parole supervisor that she, Ms. Kimberly Mace, the parole office, that was his PO supervisor, and that would definitely never get approved by the supervisor. See, the supervisor got the information from the victim, so therefore there was no reversal on that.
Well, I just don't think, I don't think that he should be in there because of things that I do. If it's something that we have to not be in communication with, I want him to still be able to live his life and bear his life and get out and do what he was trying to do while he was out. If it's something that we have to just make sure that he don't have a contact with us, that's something that we have to make sure to do, but I don't think he should lose, he already was going for 11 years, I don't think he should have to lose more because of me being in my emotions and in my feelings. I don't think it should be taken from him. So if I have to do what I have to do is to stay away from them, I'm very present and I know now that that's what I'm going to have to do.
So let me ask you another question, because there was a statement in here that he was arrested in 2016, but he was incarcerated. Did you have an altercation with someone else, or was he ever arrested for assaulting you? I'm trying to understand.
No, I don't know what that is about.
What about prior to?
To
him being incarcerated? Could there be an error in the date?
This may have been error in the date, because...
Was he ever arrested for assaulting you? Prior to?
Nothing I could recall.
Checked on it myself. I mean, poor names. I mean, he was incarcerated in 2016, so I don't know if that is a typo on the date. I just reading it says that that it was victim says the defendant was arrested in 2016 for assaulting him. A search of public records showed the defendant was arrested on February 8th, 2016 for disorderly conduct, and then again on February 9th, 2016 for misdemeanor assault. Unless there was something on the court date on the public records database and there's somebody that has a similar name, there's another Trayvon Williams out there. But this is, as far as any arrest occurring in 2016, that would, he would have been in prison. So that's why I don't know if it was a typo or if it was another individual.
So, Ms. Williams, just so we can maybe try to clear this up, you may or may not get out of this with this. So in 2016, was there somebody else arrested for assaulting you that may have used his name?
No. I've never been in any altercation with anybody in 2016. I was actually pregnant in 2016, so I wouldn't have been fighting anybody here. I don't know what that is, but
okay, thank you.
Dr.
Ray? Yes, sir. I think we're just trying to really understand. I think that we really, well, as one board member, as I've stated before, we can't speak for each other. As one board member, I'm sympathetic towards what has happened with you and Mr. Williams. Let me ask this. Let me just say this, as you already know, and your mother already know, and Mr. Williams already know, this is not a trial here. We can't, this is not a, we're not judges. This is not a trial. But I think that's one reason that, well, I do feel that that's one reason that Ali gave him the opportunity of pleading the fifth, which he did not, because whatever is said here can be requested. If this should go any further in terms of the judiciary system, this whole thing is being recorded, so it can be. But I guess my initial question is, to be sure, you, based on what you were saying there, you did, my terminology, you did attack him.
Yes, I did.
Well, was this physically attack, or was this verbal attack? Was it physical, or was it
just
verbal?
No, both. I physically attacked him, and I verbally attacked him.
And just for me, and not for the court, not for the rest of the board members, did he ever attack you?
No, he was going to, like, try to stop me from attacking him.
he never hit you, he never, nothing like that ever happened, he never responded. I mean, I know you, what you're saying now, you were the one who was aggressive. That he didn't respond, and, you know, somebody hit me, then I may hit them back for whatever reason, and I'm just asking that that happened. And,
it was more of a holding me down, like stopping me, like, sure, don't listen to me, like, I'm sorry, don't, you know, it was more of that, but I was still, like, trying to get at him.
Now, I'm just asking, this has already been asked by all the board members. Let me just ask it my way. Why did you... Why did you get this order of protection? Why did you go to law enforcement? Why did you say certain things to this parole officer? I know you said you didn't know that it was going this way and all of that, but why would you do something like that if you didn't do anything?
Because I was just really hurt and all the support that I gave him, how much I was there, and for him to go and do what he did in our relationship, I felt like he destroyed our family because he took himself out of the situation by going and cheating. And so I just told myself, I don't want you to be around me no more. I want you to come to my house anymore. And when the police came, I talked to them and I told them that I didn't want him to come around me anymore. And they told me that I would have to get order of protection in order to do that. So I ran down and I got order of protection without even giving myself time to calm down or think about how it was going to affect anybody in our family, my kids, me, his family, anybody. I just went and I just did it.
Why are you retracting it now, ma'am?
Because
this is the third time, I believe, as has already been stated. You know, and you said something a couple of other times, now you're saying something completely different. Why are you retracting it, ma'am?
Because I was wrong. I don't think that he should have more of his life taken away because I was just emotionally unstable, I guess. I was in my feelings. I was mad. I was hurt. I don't feel like the relationship stuff should affect him anyway. That's something that we just kept in the house. That's something that he did. That's something that he did to put himself there, like, criminally. Like, he didn't do anything. It was just me being emotionally unstable and being mad and just going off on it and going crazy on it.
Now, you don't have to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you know he was cheating on you?
He fell asleep on the couch when he was coming to my son. And he fell asleep, and the phone was unlocked because my son watches Fortnite on YouTube. My daughter, she's 2, she's very, very active. She grabbed the phone, and she ran into my room with it. And I seen her with it, and we don't allow her to play with our cell phones. So I took it from her, and I saw it was unlocked. So when I saw it was unlocked, because I didn't really pass on to his phones, when I saw it was unlocked, I went in it. And I looked through the text messages, and I saw like very descriptive text of what he was doing. And I just blew a fuse and I went in there and started going off.
And all that happened within what, a period of an hour, 2 hours, all this, I mean, all this, what happened? Was it a matter of days or it just happened?
It was that day. I don't remember how long it happened because I got so mad to where I actually had blacked out. I was on the floor in the kitchen, like passed out, like that's how. And because I had like movements that affects my breathing. And so I was so riled up, I had passed out. So I don't really know how long it was. It was over an hour. I'm pretty sure it was over an hour, but I don't know how long it was.
Have you had those type of emotions before about anything where you just get upset and pass out, or this was just,
no,
you were just so hurt by this?
I was so hurt because I had been there for all these years and stuff, and I just couldn't believe that his behavior towards me when he got out, I couldn't believe it.
Do you know the person who allegedly?
Yeah, I don't know.
Friend of yours or somebody in the
club? Somebody was never like me. He was high school with these girls, and they never had liked me since, and he went right back to the girls that he knew who wanted to hurt me, so, and I knew them, and so they were able to like rub my face when they were doing, so it hurt me even more. So, I just blew up over it.
Regardless of how we grow up, I'm going to say I really feel sorry for you and what happened. This is just an unfortunate situation. For you, for Mr. Williams, for his mother, this very unfortunate situation, and it's just something that too bad that we found ourselves here and that we have, you retracted, you sworn three times and now you retract, and it's just something that's, I feel for you, that's all that I'm saying. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Weston, do you have something?
Yes, I just wanted to add some clarification regarding a discrepancy with the 2016 date on the warrant. I'm reading the phone notes here dated August 7th, 2018. This is from the board supervisor, Kimberly Lease. And it states on there that Michelle Rushing, who provided the supervisor with order of protection against the offender for DV assault. The offender has not yet been served. The victim stated the offender slapped her on the left side of her cheek with an open hand twice and hit her with a purse. On June 20th, 2018, the offender choked her and pushed his fist in her cheek and eye. She stated she had been the victim of DV in the past when the offender fractured her wrist in 2007. Now, looking at his previous arrest record, he was arrested. There was a charge on March 4th, 2011, 2006 for assault, Arizona, that was dismissed in March 4, 2007, assault, which was not processed. So I believe those dates when I did a public record search that the PM did, that should have been 2016, it would have been 2006 for the disorderly conduct and the misdemeanor assault. I believe that 2016 was a typo.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know where my wrist, I don't know where, I never said that, I don't know where I said anything about my wrist, I don't know where that came from.
The supervisor that you spoke to.
But I never told him that he broke my wrist, he never broke my wrist, I didn't tell him that.
Any other questions?
I wanted to ask his mom a question. I don't have any more questions for her. Ms. Gray.
Hang on a minute, Paul.
Huh?
Hang on a minute.
Okay, yes.
I just wanted to say one thing here on the order of protection, and it's on page 5 or 5 pages, if you will. It says, I feel that the domestic violence is unsafe for my children to be around and to witness in case they were to be hurt accidentally during an assault or in case I was hurt and not able to care for their safety. Okay, so in order of protection, you name your children as victims.
I don't think he was physically himself.
Right, but you named them as victims.
Oh, okay.
And so there's an order of protection, which is public record, even though you have washed, it's still public record. And that statement is what you put in there to just sort of that quote was the truth, but you named yourself and your children as victims. So you, a lot of people misunderstand the way things work, okay? So if you get arrested for whatever, and you go in front of the judge, and unless you plead guilty, there's options and everything, okay? So they go in there and they look at it, and the attorneys say, I'm not gonna mess with this one, so they dismiss it. Does not alleviate the fact that it ever happened. It only says that there was nothing moving forward. Same thing with order of protection. Once it's squashed, doesn't mean it never existed, okay? It's there. And it's public record and everything. So that issue, you did state in your protection that you were concerned for their safety, okay, and your safety, and that's why the order of protection was issued.
I didn't know that. If I would have known that, I would have known.
Unfortunately, there's some unexpected consequences sometimes. Okay, I think that's all the questions we have for you. Thank you very much for joining us today and testifying.
Thank you.
Could you?
No.
Could you step back up to the podium, please? And state your name again.
Michelle Cooper.
Mr. Johnson.
Ms. Collette, I'm sure you can understand the difficult situation we're kind of in right now as a result of all of these things going on. My question for you is, your son stays with you, is that correct?
Yes,
he was staying with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you understand that it is the policy of the Department of Corrections, not the courts, Department of Correction, where he'll be on parole, that he cannot have any contact whatsoever with his kids or his the mother of his kids, Ms. Williams. Do you understand that?
Ms. Russia.
Ms. Russia, do you understand that?
I understand that. That's in terms of his... parole when he's released, then he would have to abide by it if he doesn't want to be put back into detention if he's released. So that's something that they're going to have to deal with. It's like, you know, it was a domino effect. So until he's, you know, after parole, he establishes his parental rights to the court to see his children, then that, you know, that's what I have to, you know.
I'm just in my mind.
So regardless, like if he's incarcerated, if he's in prison, he will not be able to see his kids anyways.
Correct.
So if he agrees to, if he's released, to not, you know, have contact with her or the kids, that's something that he's going to have to do. So regardless, so we would need to have that agreement and then look into what our legality, our legal rights, you know, regarding, his role as a father once he, you know, comes home. We need to look into that. Because right now, I don't know what his legal rights are towards his children. I know since they weren't married, he doesn't have any legal right to set up any type of visitation and things like that. We need to consult a lawyer to review the, what his rights are.
Okay, so, and what I'm hearing from you, I do understand, But what I'm saying is that we have no jurisdiction over what his legal rights are. But while he's on parole,
that he would need to abide by
what was part of the condition of his parole would be that he can't do it, not because he doesn't have a even if he was a legal father and on the birth certificate and everything, that would still apply. So it's not the purpose of the legality of his rights as a parent. It's the purpose that it is the policy, it is their policy that if anyone is, you know, named as a victim or alleged as a victim, then that person can no longer have contact with them for the remainder of the time that they're on parole. So it's not about the legalities, because that's a whole different issue. This is just about whether you violate your parole or you adhere to what your parole says that you have to do. If you violate the parole and the parole says you can't do that, and you do it, then you go back to prison. And that's that serious. I mean, it's very, very, very serious. I understand the complication that is that's been created, but you know, because of that, it's a very, very serious thing, and it's, you know, your son is the one who is suffering the major consequences as a result of it, but he's going to have to adhere to some things. Not to say that he would get out on parole. I'm just talking. I wanted to talk with you because you're going to have, if he was, then you know you would have to understand and play a major role in that.
Exactly. Let me clarify. So the statements that she made to the parole office, and it's documented, and the order of protection are two separate documentation. So the one, the order of protection, since it was withdrawn, the statement that she made at the parole office is still.
We're not like the order of protection. The statement that she made is made. She withdrew the order of protection. That like. Mr. Neal was explaining, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It just means that he no longer want to pursue it. That's what that means.
Right, because he didn't get a chance to, like, because he was locked up before he had a chance to contest it or anything like that. So what would be his rights towards that, contesting any type of statement
so,
that was written?
So for him to go to court, you know, and contest it out of protection if it was still, and that's a different thing. Well, what I'm trying to ask you about it has nothing to do with court. It has to do with
the parole
and the policy of the Department of Corrections of parole that, you know, their policy is that he, because these allegations were made, that and because, you know, of this warrant and why he was arrested and put back in, that he's not going to be able to have any contact with them whatsoever. And that's what I'm trying to understand, because if he's out and he has any contact, he's just going to get violated again. And so I'm trying to understand, because I'm not really hearing, okay, we're going to make sure that he doesn't, that he's going to follow his parole.
That's what we're going to make sure that he does it, but we're still going to seek out what legal rights he has, but he would need to follow his terms of parole, because that's his terms for him to be a free man. So he would need to follow that and not have any contact with Sherelle, Trayon, or Talena, because they are listed as victims against him at this time. So he would need to follow that, because that's his terms of parole. And so if it's his terms and he signs off on it, says that he agreed. You know, I understand it. If he signs and says that he understands it, then that's what we're going to have to follow by.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Neff, thank you.
You have anything else?
No, this is my boss.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. Okay. Mr. Williams, we're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will discuss and make a determination in a couple of minutes. Before we do, we'd like to offer you an opportunity to give us a final statement. Any other information you think might be pertinent to our decision? We just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already covered, okay?
I'd like to speak. Thank y'all for taking the time to consider my case. I've been in DOC for 11 years, as you know, and while down, because I've been conscious of, you know, maybe my anger can't get me back in here. And so that's one of the things that I have corrected. I took in multiple anger management programs. LifeWell has all these certificates and everything. My main thing is to get out, stay out. I believe those classes have worked for me. I took parenting classes, anger management, stress management, just trying to level my head and minimize any mistakes that I can make. And I believe those classes have worked, because like Shira has stated that, you know, she has came at me, and you know, I didn't lift one finger. I could walk away. Things could piss me off, and you know, I could walk away, and I keep conscious that I don't want to be an orange, and that I just want to, you know, stay there and be able to make a difference in my life. I've tried hard. I've worked hard. I didn't do no drugs. I appeared to my parole office, and he had changed my house many occasions, and you know, when he called me that day, he told me I had to come down to the office to get to straighten out some things with my girlfriend had said. And you know, as soon as I go back there, I was being arrested, and I couldn't really give any statement. They just said that they had allegations against me and that I had to see the board on it. So I'm really hoping you guys consider that, you know, I'm doing everything right. I haven't broken any laws, and I'm following my parole, the conditions of my parole. Whatever needs to be done for me to follow those conditions, I'll do. I'm not trying to think I'm above the law, smarter than the law. Whatever conditions that I need to do, I will do. I even apologize for this incident, and you know, I wish it could have been handled in a better way. But I seriously didn't touch her. I didn't hurt her. You know, my kids, my everything. If I could be free and if I could support them in some kind of other way until my parole is over with, financially or just them knowing that, you know, I'm there, somewhere around there, I'll be happy with that. I'm just ready to continue life and be out of here and try to redo some wrongs that I've done. My charge is attempted murder. This was what I went to trial on, self-defense, and I was convicted of attempted murder. It wasn't actual murder. But yeah, anything that I can do, I will do. I'm not trying to think I'm slick or anything, or try to outmaneuver or outthink you guys. I'm really sincerely wanting to be home and continue my life. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, the board's going to get into a discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think that we're addressing you, but we won't be. We'll ask you to stand firm. Just remain silent. You hear the whole conversation, and once we make a decision, I'll get back to you, sir. Okay? Okay. Board's going to discussion. Well, this is definitely an unusual situation. I will say that Mr. Williams sounds sincere sitting there on the telecommunications, but I'm very concerned with even an attempted second-degree murder is still there had to be something going on. Somebody had been hurt pretty bad or threatened very seriously. So we'll go back to the anger management. When it gets out after 11 years, I don't know, it's really a convoluted mess that this has become with all the statements, but we have to go on, you know, good faith that everything that's in our work pack and everything is as correct as it can be, and then we always have somebody from the Department of Corrections that can look up things and determine if there was a typo on some of the alleged charges. But with the whole situation the way it is, I'm just very uncomfortable with the thought of returning Mr. Williams to community supervision without having some kind of a day-by-day assurance that the paths of the victims that were stated in the order of protection and everything aren't contacted, because that's pretty much an immediate return to prison. But I'm not comfortable with the explanation of the assaulting behavior. What's been described as going on, it sounds like there may have been some returned fire, so to speak, when the altercations occurred. And I'm just, my mind is just not wrapping around return to community supervision at this time. But I would like to hear any discussion from my fellow board members, Mr. Johnson.
I understand this complicated situation that's been created, but I do think, you know, one thing that's probably the most truth about it is that this incident started over, you know, he states of some infidelity and her finding some information on his cell phone and going off on the cell phone and her being the aggressor and in it. It's a difficult situation because it involves just not just the Ms. Russian, but also, you know, the kids and involved in here. But I think that Ms. Russian probably was the aggressor in this situation, and says that she was really, really hurt and made some statements, you know, to get back at him. And you know, not realizing the consequences of those statements that she makes. But there is some concern about him having contact with her, and I think that maybe to relieve the issues that he doesn't have that contact with her is that maybe if he was put on a monitor system, because he was doing well, he was working, he was negative UAs for it's like about 4 or 5 months of negative UAs, and he was reporting. I mean, there's been no other incidents that he's been involved in since he's actually been released, other than these allegations that have been made here. But I would be supportive of him. I'd hate to see him have to go back for, he actually has almost a little over a year and a half left on his parole that he still has. He's not due to be released on April 9th of 2020. But I think he was out, he was doing well, he was working, he was trying to do well by his kids, and this whole thing of being with someone else and just created this situation. I've seen situations where someone's gone through someone's phone, and when they went through that phone, it created total chaos. And that's kind of the situation that we're in now. But I believe Mr. Williams has been trying to do well and do good. He's working and abided by it, not do drugs or get in any other trouble since he's been out. But perhaps as a safety measure, if he was released out on his back out on community supervision, that he'd be placed on a monitor system so that they can monitor his activities and, you know, make sure he's not having that contact with Ms. Russian or the kids, because that's just it's a bad situation. He shouldn't, you know, I think he understands, I think his mom understands the seriousness of what all of this has actually created. That's my opinion.
Dr. Murray?
Thank you. Mr. Neal, I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, I appreciate what the Honorable Mr. Johnson has stated. However, I think that when we put aside the law, and the law is the law, we can't change the law. That's the one thing that we cannot do. But when we put aside the fact that for whatever reason, and I think I may understand, but I can't support the fact that Ms. Russian has gone on the oath 3 times, changed. Just don't change once you're on the oath. That's not like talking to your friends out on the streets. When you're on the oath, you're on the oath. She was on the oath with that. A parole officer, she was on the oath with that in the order of protection. And now she comes to us on the oath, and I don't know if she's just fighting the reason she's changing. I don't know what's going on. That I cannot figure out. But one of the things that stuck with me is the fact that I respect Mr. Williams. However, Mr. Williams is such a great father, which I believe that he was. But why would he start having a relationship with persons that his wife or his girlfriend was new? They go back, they went up in her face. I just can't understand it. I cannot understand how he can be out for a year and a half without having some type of contact with the kids or with her. I just can't see it. And as I say, I respect what Mr. Johnson has said, but as one board member, at this particular time, and I stand to be persuaded otherwise, but as it stands at this particular moment, I'm not in favor, sir.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion then. Based on all the information that we have in warrant number 2018W2285, that packet also includes the copy of the order of protection and permit issue, the statements of Mr. Williams and Ms. Cooper and Ms. Rushing, and our discussion, I am going to move to revoke the community supervision of Mr. Williams as he was selected, violated term condition of supervision, and that lapse or about to lapse in the criminal ways for company. And specifically, if what the situation is, this housing, it's kind of a known what might have been going on, totally criminal ways, but there was enough allegation that he was assaultive, and that would be my motion.
I find regrets, but I'm a sucker, sir. Thank
you. I disagree.
Okay. Motion was by myself, revocation, seconded by Dr. Wright, and disagreed by Mr. Johnson. So, Mr. Williams, the board has voted to revoke your community supervision at this time. You are scheduled for release on or about April 9th of 2020. You've heard the discussion and our decision. And we do wish you the best of luck and continue with any anger management program that you can get while you're in there. And make yourself a real good plan for when you get out so that you don't get in trouble and don't have to return to DOC. So this will end your hearing, sir, and if you would put the CO3 back on the phone, please.
I think you said yes.
Who has him?
I have him on the website.